UK Wine Show, show number 127. Eduardo Bertran on Fastino and Rioja. On this week's award-winning wine show, we're talking with Eduardo Bertran, and he's talking about Fastino and Rioja.
And in the news, Harper's issue an open letter to the government. The English harvest is underway, and Prosecco goes for promotion.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 127 for the 17th of October, 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Eduardo Bertran. Eduardo is the marketing director for Fastino, and we're going to be talking to him about Fastino, one of Spain's largest producers of wine, and based in the Rioja. In this week's spotlight, we're continuing our look at soils by looking at the influence of the surface layer of soils have on the wine, and in what is becoming a favourite part of mine, the quote, which this week is, wine is the most civilised thing in the world. Who said that? Clues throughout the show, answer at the end. But next up, we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Trade magazine Harper's and the Wine and Spirit Trade Association have issued an open letter to British MPs after a leaked consultation document showed the government plans to implement a mandatory code of practice for the drinks trade in a bid to curb our so-called binge drinking culture. The initiative has been timed to coincide with the end of the government's consultation on its national alcohol strategy and has been launched to ensure politicians make their decisions based on the real facts, not the scare stories pushed by anti-alcohol campaigners. The letter urges MPs to take on board the reality of alcohol consumption in the UK by setting out five key facts. Number one, average alcohol consumption in the UK is falling. The per capita alcohol consumption has been falling since 2004, and the UK ranks 13th out of 27 in the EU league table of per capita alcohol consumption. On average, Britons drink 17% less than the French and 19% less than the Germans. Number two, the majority of people drink responsibly. The numbers drinking over the recommended weekly guidelines actually fell between 2000 and 2006, with men down from 29% to 23% and women down from 17% to 12%. And in the UK, 7% of the population drink 33% of the alcohol. Fact number three, underage drinking is declining, but those who drink consume more. Between 2001 to 2006, underage drinking was down from 26% of 11 to 15-year-olds to 21%. The number of 11 to 15-year-olds who have never drunk alcohol are increasing, though. In 2000, 40%, and in 2006, 46%. And weekly alcohol consumption among those 11 to 15-year-olds who drink is up from an average of 10 units in the last decade to 11.4 units per year in 2006. Number four, binge drinking is in decline but is more common among 16 to 24-year-olds. The number of people reporting binge drinking, that's over 8 units on at least one day in a previous week, is down. For men, it's 18%, and for women, it's 8%. Among 16 to 24-year-olds, though, 27% of men and 21% of women reported binge drinking in 2006. But that is down from 36 and 26% in 2001. And the last point, number five, laws to tackle alcohol misuse are not being enforced. Just two people have been prosecuted and one found guilty of selling alcohol to a drunken person since the 2003 Licensing Act was introduced. And only six people in England and Wales were found guilty of supplying alcohol to under-18s in 2006. And lastly, no one since 2004 has been given the maximum fine for refusing to surrender alcohol in a public place or refusing a police officer's instruction to stop drinking. So those are the five facts, and according to Harper's, the 26-page document proposes tough legislation placing restrictions on the labelling, promotion and sale of alcohol. These measures would include a sensible drinking message statement at point of sale and on labels, a ban on promotions that offer free drinks, and proof of age if buyers look under 21.
Cheers, Jane. The statistics I thought were incredible was that just two people have been prosecuted and only one found guilty of selling alcohol to a drunken person since 2003 Licensing Act was introduced. This is amazing, as I often see some pretty drunk people falling out of certain bars in Twickenham. And you have to ask, who served them? Particularly given some of these bars are right opposite the police station. Perhaps the police may want to enforce the powers that they have before they get even more powers. That said, I have no problems with removing promotions of alcohol and banning free drinks. Although not mentioned, I think it could be a case for restricting where alcohol can be sold. I live in a quiet residential area in Twickenham, but within two blocks I have 5 pubs and 5 bottle shops. That's a crazy amount. It's not surprising that pubs are shutting down quite regularly. I'm all for variety, but this is just over the top, and my area is no better or any worse than many areas in London. While I'm happy with higher regulation, particularly on drink promotions, the industry has done much to act responsibly, and it's a shame that the government is going for more powers without enforcing the powers they already have. What's next, Jane?
Well, the harvest is well underway in UK vineyards, and according to Trade Association English Wine Producers, early predictions are that 2008 volumes will be on the light side, though not as low as in 2007. The southwest was badly hit by bad weather from flowering onwards, so vineyards such as Camel Valley are down, but Three Choirs in Gloucestershire are seeing an increase on last year, and other regions are faring better. On the whole, sugar levels are good, while acids are a little high, though the last few days of warm and dry weather might improve things. There are some new vineyards coming into production for the first time this year, but much of this will be made into fizz, so unfortunately won't be available to drink until about 3 years' time. The official data collected at harvest, which will confirm the total volume, won't be released until spring 2009.
Well, with the harvest underway, even if volumes are low, I do worry about wineries who, after a disastrously low 2007 vintage, may not have the stock or the financial resources to deal with another short vintage. If they need to borrow money from the banks, they may find under the current financial climate, things may not be very good for them. Speaking of climate, while I'm a believer in climate change, I read last year that we should expect poor weather for the next 10 years or so. According to the article, the nature of the Earth's orbit and wobble, often recalled to as Milankovitch cycles, mean that we're due for some cold, wetter weather for the next 5 to 8 years. This is a statistical average and doesn't mean that climate change is not happening. It's just that we're due for a bit of a cold couple of years. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, my final story this week is about Prosecco, where the DOC di Conegliano Valdobbiadene Consortio has applied to the Italian government for promotion to the higher DOCG status to allow the best quality Proseccos to be recognised and to take advantage of the increasing sales on popularity of Prosecco. The DOCG classification was established in 1963 and is the highest legal category of Italian wines. But at the same time, the basic IGT level Prosecco, grown in the lower plains, will have to go through stricter quality control, and some of those may be elevated to DOC status, while others might be demoted, losing the right to put Prosecco on the label. Today, the Prosecco DOC produces 57 million bottles, of which 15 million are exported worldwide. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can get these stories on our website, 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. Prosecco is a lovely, clean, fruit-driven wine using what they call the tank method. That is, no bottle aging and, as a result, no bready, yeasty characteristics, so common with many traditional sparkling wines. I do have a soft spot for Prosecco. I just wish it was a bit cheaper. How are you guys going with the quote, "Wine is the most civilized thing in the world"? Any ideas who said it? It was said by a Pulitzer Prize-winning American writer who lived between 1899 and 1961. Any ideas? Next up, though, we have the spotlight. In one of our last looks at the effects of soils on grapes, we have a look at the influence of the surface characteristics of the soil on the grapes and the final wine. The surface of a vineyard can have two additional influences on grapes. These are the conductivity and the convection of heat, and also the reflective nature of the soil. On conductivity and convection of the heat, rocks can change the temperature of the region. Large rocks or pebbles heat up during the day and then radiate the heat back into the air at night. You may have noticed this at dusk after a hot sunny day, walking past a brick wall. The wall radiates heat onto your face. Wine regions that this affect include Châteauneuf-du-Pape in southern Rhone, where they have large round stones known as pudding stones, In Melbourne, New Zealand, the northern part of the Wairau Valley, where stony soils lie on the surface from an old riverbed. In Germany, in the Mosel, where slate can heat up the grapes at night, assisting the ripening period. But what is the effect of this on grapes? Well, it's often said that cool nights and warm days preserve the acidity in wines. So by having a higher temperature at night, you can expect the acidity in the wine to be just slightly lower. The second effect that the surface can have is on the reflectivity of light. Dark soils will absorb light, and in particular UV light, while lighter soils and even white rocks such as chalk will reflect even more light. The effect is similar to skiing, either snow or water skiing, where the sun reflects off the surface, with many skiers often getting tanned. Grapes that are exposed to higher levels of UV light will see a progression of flavour development faster than those from areas with low reflection, all other things being equal. The other effect is that grapes will experience higher UV light and will develop thicker skins and pigmentation and flavour. This is similar to grapes grown at altitudes in Mendoza, Argentina. That pretty much ends this week's Spotlight. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at our book review and then the conclusion to this month's poll. If you recall, the current poll is, in this current economic climate, are you cutting back or spending more on wine? Do go to our website, 3050.co.uk, and go to podcast, and there you'll find on the right-hand side the question. And have your say. Speaking of having your say, how are you getting on with that quote? Wine is the most civilized thing in the world. Here are some more clues. After enlisting in the American Red Cross and spending much of World War I in Italy as an ambulance driver, before becoming the first American to be wounded in Italy, his first novel was published in 1926 called The Sun Also Rises, but known in the UK as Fiesta. Any ideas? One area that the sun always rises, even though it was really cold when I went there, was Rioja. And next up we have the interview with Eduardo Beltran, Marketing Director of Festino. We're going to be talking with Eduardo about Rioja and Festino, so let's hear what he has to say. Hi, I'm here with Eduardo Beltran. How are you, Eduardo?
Yeah, it's very nice, thank you.
Excellent. You're the marketing director for Festino. And we're going to be talking a wee bit about Festino today, and a wee bit about your different brands, etc. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about how Festino started?
Faustino is a family company that was founded in 1861, and at this moment is the fourth generation of the family that is managing the future of, and the present of the company. Okay, we are in Ollón, a little village of Rioja Alavesa.
Yep.
That is the town where the company was founded in that year. Okay, now we are one of the most important companies in the business wine in Spain. We have different wineries in the main regions in Spain. Okay, we have three wineries in Rioja: Bodegas Faustino, Bodegas Marqués de Vitoria, and Bodegas Campillo. Mm-hmm. We have another winery in Navarra, Bodegas Valcarlos. And we have another winery in La Mancha, Bodegas Leganza. And the last project of the company is Bodegas Portia, the newest.
And where's that?
In Ribera del Duero. Ribera del Duero is Bodegas Portia. It's a new winery that we are building with the design of Norman Foster.
Who is Norman Foster?
Yes, Norman Foster is the prestigious architect that you know.
No.
No? Don't you know Norman Foster?
No.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And this is a very important project for the group. But now, anyway, the bigger business for the group is here in Rioja.
What sort of wines do you make in Rioja?
We make a very big range of wines. Mm-hmm. We elaborate white, rosé, and red wines. Mm-hmm. And we have very famous brands like Faustino First or Faustino Five that you know very well in England.
Yeah, sure. Why do you call it Faustino One, Faustino Five, Faustino Seven? What's the number mean?
Yes, this is a way to classify the wines. Mm-hmm. Faustino First is the Gran Reserva, is the top.
Yeah, the Grand Reserva. So it's had the most aging in barrels, most aging in bottles.
And then come the others, the 5 and the 7. This is the way.
Is there a Festino 2 or a Festino 3?
No, this is not in our plans for the future.
I don't understand. I never understood why you call it Festino 1 and 5 and 7.
No, it's a tradition. It's a way of call the wines that our president started, I think that 15 years ago, and we have go on with this tradition.
Okay, so but the wines are the Faustino 7 is a Crianza.
Faustino 7 is the Crianza. Faustino 5 is a Reserva. And Faustino First is the Gran Reserva.
Okay.
In Rioja, we classify the wines in Crianza, Reserva, and Gran Reserva. Mm-hmm. It depends of the time that the wine has been in oak and in bottle.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later on. But you've also got some other brands, Marcus Vittoria, which I see a lot of in the UK, but more, not so much in the supermarkets, more for restaurants. And Campio is also... Where does Campio get sold?
Marqués de Vitoria is the younger winery in Rioja. The younger.
The younger
winery for Faustino Group in Rioja. And our style in Marqués de Vitoria is we look for wines style more modern.
Mm-hmm. A more modern style.
Yes, you can taste wines more with more fruit, yeah, and this style.
Very bright. I've always known they're 100% Tempranillo.
Yes,
and they're very bright cherry fruits.
Yes. And Campillo is a very special winery. It's a wonderful winery with a marvelous building.
Marvelous building. Yep.
That I invite you to visit.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it's very nice, very nice. We elaborate there in this winery wines with a more classic style than Marqués de Vitoria, but with a quality, is the bigger selection of grapes for the group. Our best grapes are for these wines. We look for also a good combination of classic and modern wines. Is our objective. And Spain is one of the top brands in the market, yes.
Do you sell your wines through different channels? Like Marcus Vittoria, I never see in the supermarket in the UK.
No, but we use the different channels. We sell in supermarket and in bar and restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I don't know exactly where have you looked for, but...
For me, I always thought Marcus Vittoria was more of a restaurant wine, mm-hmm. whereas Festino was certainly... I've always seen it in the supermarkets, uh-huh. and Majestic and Oddbins, you know, the big retail shops. Uh-huh. And Campio, which one is it? It's not...
Campillo?
Oh, I haven't seen that. I don't see that as much as the Festino. But maybe I just notice the Festino more in the shops. You've shown me around your bodega here in... How do you pronounce it? Oñón, and the town.
The town Oñón.
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 No, Eñe no. Oñón. Oñón.
Oñón.
Oñón.
Oñón. Oñón.
Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. See, my Spanish is bad. It's worse than your English. Oñón. You've shown me around your winery in Oñón. As we went through it, you could see where the winery had been expanded over time. You know, we saw some old square tanks. Mm-hmm. You showed me you keep a lot of wine here. You're saying 5 million bottles.
Yes, here in Faustino we have almost 9 million of bottles.
9 million, yeah.
Who will be in the market in 3, 4, 5, 6 or more years.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be Faustino 5 or Faustino First.
Yeah.
The most of them.
That must cost a lot of money for storage.
Yes. This is the process of aging in bottle is very important for the winery, as you know.
Yeah.
And it's important if you analyze the financial questions, because you have a lot of money in the winery waiting to become... money.
Yeah, to realize the cash.
To realize cash, okay. But for us, the most important is to have the confidence that the wine that you introduce in the bottle 8 or 9 years before the consumption is going to be perfect when the consumer opens the bottle and tastes the wine. This is the most important, and this is very, very difficult. You have to be very sure that you are doing to do it with this regularity and to do so well every year.
Sure.
Faustino First, Faustino Five are wines that are a lot of years in the market, and we have a very good and very consistent quality, and this is very, very difficult, very difficult. This is the real challenge that we have every day.
Do you always make a Faustino 1 or a Grand Reserva wine every year?
No, we don't make every year. We only make in the special vintage, where when we find the very good grapes.
How often is it, every 10 years, how often would you produce a Grand Reserva?
No, it's more usual. For example, now we are in 1996 and we have 1995, but I don't know if we are going to have 1997, maybe we'll be 1998, okay? Maybe we have 6 or 7 years in each
10 years.
10 years, every, more or less. More
okay,
or less.
6 or 7 years every decade.
Yes, to get a wine with so quality 10 or 12 years before the vintage, you need very powerful grapes that make sure that you are going to have very good wines.
Do you have vineyards that are specially set aside for this, or do you get all your wines in, put the wine into barrel, and then select the best barrels for your Grand Reserves?
Yes. We select the best.
So all you don't have vineyards that you say this vineyard is my Grand Reserve Rioja.
There are some vineyards that we know that every year we can get their grapes for the Grand Reserva.
Okay.
But we don't say absolutely these grapes are only for the Grand Reserva. We have to analyze there. We have to see if these grapes are okay, and then we decide to use for the Grand Reserva. But we know that the special conditions, the altitude, the other elements, tell us that these grapes, this vineyard is going to be correct for the Grand Reserva.
There's been trends in Rioja recently in terms of using more and more Tempranillo as the grape variety. How do you feel about that? Are you moving to more Tempranillo dominated wines, or are you keeping more with the classic grape varieties? And what are the classic grape varieties in Rioja?
Yes, it's Tempranillo is the more classic.
Yep.
But the Tempranillo is the variety who express in the best way the style of Rioja. And then in all our wines, the Tempranillo is the main variety. In all wines, at least it's a 90% of Tempranillo. We have several wines with 100% for Tempranillo.
Okay, what other grape varieties are allowed to be grown?
Apart of Tempranillo?
Yeah.
Yes, maybe a little of Graciano, a little of Mazuelo, or a little of Garnacha. It depends on. Mazuelo and Graciano are other typical Rioja varieties.
Okay. And they're used for red. So it's three red wine varieties?
Yes, we use four.
Four.
Mainly three.
Mainly three.
We don't use very much the Garnacha.
We tried earlier a couple of your different wines. You've got a new wine that you're about to release into the market. What's it called, and why did you produce a new style of wine under the Faustino brand?
The market is very fermented, and we have to elaborate wines for the different type of consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there are consumers that look for a classic type of wine, and other consumers that is demanding wines with other style. More modern, more fruity, and these kind of things. But I think that we elaborate very actual wines.
Just so listeners know, when you say elaborate, you mean make wine.
Make wine. Ah, yes. We make wines. We make wines with a very actual style. I think that in almost all our wineries, in all our wineries, we are always trying to see what's happening in the market. We are very interested in knowing the new taste, what is demanding the consumer. We adapt our wines to the needs and to demands of the market. And so we have so big range of wines that we have wines for all types of consumer. But anyway, in all of them, I think that we have a actual style.
A what style?
Modern style.
A modern style of wine.
Yes.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there. Eduardo, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you for you.
Eduardo showed me all over their main office and cellars in Rialca, from the big winery through to their museum and where they age the bottles. I really enjoyed my trip to Rialca. It's a fantastic place to be. Although while I was there, I did try some of the worst tapas of my life. Deep fried salty pig fat. It was disgusting and I couldn't eat it. Next week, we're going to complete our look at Rialca by finding out more about the sub-regions in Rialca and how that influences the wines. Some of you who listened to last week's show may recall that we spoke with Bruce Walker about regulations in Canada. I had some feedback from a listener, Bill Turner, in British Columbia. He seemed to think that while the British Columbian Liquor Control Board, or BCLCB, does an excellent job at promoting British Columbian wines, they, like their counterparts in other provinces, do a poor job of promoting wines from other provinces, such as Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic provinces. In fact, a law passed in 1928 during Prohibition still makes it illegal to directly ship wines between provinces by wine producers or private citizens. Recently, the liquor control boards in the provinces of Manitoba and Ontario have sent letters to the provinces of British Columbia, protesting that direct shipments of wine by British Columbian producers to residents, and the wineries have been warned that they will be charged under this old law. Bill says that, as I noted in the podcast, it's all about money. In British Columbia, the wine tax is 118% higher in Quebec, but lower in Ontario. This is both for domestic and imported wines. Bill also wrote a few other points about a lack of wines that are available in British Columbia, with something like only 67 Argentinian wines available in British Columbia, which is fairly small given that you can probably get that sort of range from the 5 bottle shops that are around my house. Regulation, I believe, is important. Just look at the mess the banks have got into with their light regulation. But it is a balancing act. The only problem I have is when governments regulate to protect monopolies, such as in Canada. I think this is wrong. I noticed in the news this week that the government's proposal to ban free drinks in bars. Pubs were giving away free drinks to girls in bars. The idea being that it drags in lots of girls, and where girls go, the boys follow. Free booze sounds great, but the consequences are not good. So, a bit more regulation in the UK, I'm in favour of. Right, to finish up with this week, the quote, how you been getting on. Wine is the most civilised thing in the world. Did you have any joy? Well, our American writer, after spending time in Paris, returned to America, setting up home in Florida. From there, he wrote Death in the Afternoons and The Winner Takes Nothing. One of his more famous works, or at least the one I'm more aware of, is For Whom the Bell Tolls. But it was The Old Man and the Sea in 1952 that got him both commercial and critical success. It earned him the Pulitzer Prize in 1953, and the very next year, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. Any ideas who we're talking about? It is, of course, Ernest Hemingway. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.